Thank you. We are now ready to hear argument in Star Indemnity versus Rolls-Royce, and I believe we have Mr. Cunningham and Mr. Klein.
And, welcome back.
I'm sorry?
I'm saying welcome back. I was on the first go-around case.
Good morning.
Okay. We will begin with Mr. Cunningham.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, and I will keep track of my time. May it please the court, this lawsuit arises out of the crash of a medical transport helicopter in 2014. Unbeknownst to MedTrans at the time, the engine failure that led to the crash was caused by a faulty turbine wheel that Rolls-Royce had fraudulently concealed from MedTrans and the rest of the helicopter community. Rather than standing by its defective product, Rolls-Royce moved for summary judgment, claiming that the economic loss rule exempted it from liability because the engine was an integrated part of the entire helicopter, and thus the ELR precluded liability because there was no personal injury or damage to other property. MedTrans, however, pointed out that the medical suite of equipment on board was totally destroyed, which is undoubtedly other property.
What evidence in the record of damage to medical equipment?
Excellent question, Your Honor. There are actually four places in the record where there is evidence of the medical equipment on board. First of all, the NTSB report, the accident report, which is at record site ER-075, lists it as a medical transport flight. By definition, in order for a helicopter under the NTSB purview to be a medical transport flight, it has to be outfitted with medical equipment capable of providing medical services. That's the first place
in
the record.
Counsel, is that as a matter of law that there has to be certain equipment, or can it be, you know, stethoscopes and disinfectants and medically trained people?
A little bit of both, Your Honor. As a matter of law, it is a matter of NTSB regulatory rules that in order for a medical transport flight to be classified as such, it must be capable of performing and providing medical services, including
but
such
what
things
kind,
as...
What kind or what extent or with what equipment does the regulation specify that?
Your Honor, no. The regulation does not specify the type and extent of equipment, but it does require that the helicopter be capable of providing medical treatment. And another location in the record, and this is one that we did not identify in our briefing, but we did identify it yesterday in preparation for today, and it's in the information provided by Rolls-Royce in their statement of facts. It is record site ER-116, that is ER-116. That is the minimum equipment list for the aircraft that was on board at the time of the crash. The equipment list was dated April 10th, 2014, 4 days before the crash. And on that equipment list provided by Rolls-Royce, halfway down the page, is the listing of the AirMed. That is the air medical equipment. It is required by NTSB and FAA rules to be inspected every 12 months or 150 hours of operation, whichever comes first. And as the court will see on ER-116, supplied by Rolls-Royce, this aircraft was outfitted with mandatory air medical equipment that was required to be inspected and had been inspected approximately 6 months before the crash.
Excuse me, I had a question about that. Is that with respect to this specific helicopter? Because there was another piece of evidence that pertained to a different helicopter.
Yes, and I'm glad you brought that up. I would like to fall on the sword and make sure I clear up any discrepancies there. MedTrans had two helicopters, and I will shortcut the designation. One was numbered 515, Mike Tango. The other one was 509, Mike Tango. The engines were swapped. That is the discrepancy with respect to the air medical suite estimate from Executive Air Transport. That was for 515, not 509. But record site 116 is the minimum equipment list for the accident helicopter. that crashed and was a total loss. So I do need to fall on the sword.
You said this is a document. You said 116 is a document from Rolls-Royce?
It was in Rolls-Royce's statement of facts as part of the appellate record. They are the ones that put it in the appellate record.
It says it's an aircraft status sheet. Is this like, who created this document? What is this?
It's a MedTrans created document, but it was imported into the record by Rolls-Royce. So the source of the document itself is a MedTrans generated report, and it is known as an MEL or minimum equipment list. And that is a document that is generated by the aircraft operator, in this particular case, MedTrans.
The two lines that say AirMed inspection in the middle. What does that tell us about anything?
That tells us that there was an air medical suite installed on the helicopter as of, and if you look in the upper right-hand corner, Your Honor, as of April 10th, 2012, 4 days before the accident, and that was the last date that this list was updated.
How do we know that equipment was damaged in the crash?
Excellent question, Your Honor. The proof of loss that was supplied by MedTrans to Star Indemnity was a sworn proof of loss for a total loss of the entire helicopter, including all the pertinences there too.
Given the way that it landed as described in the NTSB report, that could just mean that structurally it was unsound in a way that it was infeasible to repair it or uneconomical to repair it. Doesn't necessarily mean that every component in it was, it wasn't like it burst into flames and incinerated every item in it. How do we know from that hard landing and the ski effect that's described that damaged these particular components within it?
Excellent question. Let me respond to that. In FAA parlance and NTSB rules and regulations, when an aircraft has been subjected to an overstress event as such as this one, when you have a hard landing with these skids being spread, the loads that are imparted into the airframe and all equipment installed on the airframe are considered to be overstressed. And per FAA rules, if they are determined to be irreplaceable or they may not be returned safely to service, they are a total loss. That also includes the medical equipment on board. But I would also like to point out,
how do we know that specifically? I mean, this seems to me to be a record that just cries out for somebody's affidavit saying, here are the 14 things that were on board, and after this event, 13 of them were completely unusable and had to be scrapped. It's just odd to me that we're being asked to rely on a series of what seemed to me to be rather tenuous inferences.
And Your Honor, I appreciate that observation, and I would like to point out that when Rolls-Royce moved for summary judgment, they didn't even try to claim that the medical equipment was not other equipment or other property. Their MSJ was very simple. It said the engine is an integrated part into an entire product, and because of that, the economic loss rule applies. We responded and said there was a medical suite on board that was totally destroyed. On reply, for the first time, they raised the issue that the medical equipment was either not identifiable or hadn't been sufficiently identified or was not destroyed. So under the pleading standards in Arizona, with the pleading rules, they raised for the first time on reply, which is not permitted, a factual dispute as to the status, sufficiency of the medical equipment. They didn't even challenge that it was destroyed. They simply raised the idea that medical equipment itself was not other property. So at this point in time, Rolls-Royce has never even claimed that the medical equipment was not destroyed. I appreciate your observation, and I frankly understand exactly where you're coming from, which is my point on summary judgment. This case was decided on summary judgment.
In response to the statement of, your statement of facts, and you had paragraph 34 is where this covered, they then file something that said they said it's relevant, but they deny what you say in paragraph 34. Doesn't that put you to the unnoticed? You have to do something. Your proof was deficient, and you need to do something to create a genuine issue as to other property?
Well, and they did that on reply, Your Honor, and per the Arizona rules, we were not permitted to respond to the reply, which is another issue with respect to the warranty claim on this case. We claim that they provided two unsigned, undated general warranties. We said those were not proper on a response brief. In reply, they provided an affidavit for the first time that attempted to prove up their warranty claims.
Do you really deny that that's the applicable warranty for this? I mean, what I was puzzled by here is the log is in the record, and it has the tab that says warranty. Did it not come out in discovery? What was behind that tab?
No, it did not, Your Honor. We didn't get a chance to go that far in discovery. This case was originally up to the Ninth Circuit on a choice of law issue. As soon as the Ninth Circuit issued the opinion on the choice of law, Rolls-Royce moved immediately for summary judgment on economic loss rule. So this case has not been discovered at all, which is part of the gravamen of my complaint, is that the court granted summary judgment before any discovery was performed, did not take all reasonable inferences in favor of Star Indemnity.
I mean, if you look at the tab on ER 112, you can see the warranty tab. Now, the warranties that they supplied at 123 and 124, they're long documents that are supposed to be put in and then folded over or folded under.
Yes.
You can actually see on 112, you can read at least one line of the warranty that's folded underneath, and it matches exactly what's at the fold of what they produced. I mean, is it really? I understand the issue about authentication, and maybe they, you know, the district court was lenient in letting them fix that in the last minute. But is there really any issue that is the warranty that's behind that tab?
To be perfectly honest with you, Your Honor, I don't know that there's going to be an issue with that. With respect to the original form warranty that was allegedly shipped with the engine, we haven't had a chance to discover it. But I would also like to point out that what failed on this helicopter was a replacement turbine wheel that was purchased from Premier Turbines. And there is no proof in the record that any warranty accompanied that turbine wheel, which is actually what failed. In their affidavit, in their conclusory affidavit, Mr. Sain's affidavit that they supplied for the first time on reply in violation of the rules, he said in a conclusory statement, the spare part warranty was shipped with the turbine wheel. That's literally as far as he went. He can't prove, and he did not even attempt to prove, that Premier Turbines received it, acknowledged it, or passed it along. That's my issue with many of the things that occurred at the district court level, is the judge granted summary judgment, and the only way that was possible was to take all reasonable inferences in favor of Rolls-Royce and not in favor of Medtrans. And I see that I've only got 2.5 minutes left, so I will be happy to answer any questions and continue going, but I would like to reserve a little time for rebuttal.
You may do that.
Thank you.
So may it please the court, my name's Tom Klein. I'm here on behalf of Rolls-Royce Corporation. Everything okay with audio? Okay.
Yes.
I honestly don't know why Medtrans couldn't provide something to actually prove what medical equipment on the helicopter and prove that it was damaged. The fact of the matter is they didn't. What they told the trial court is, here's the what they called an invoice listing the equipment on the helicopter, but now they acknowledge not an invoice, it's an estimate, and it's not for this helicopter. It's not for N509MT, N515MT. Now at oral argument, he said, well, that was up to ER92. He says, look at ER116, and it refers to an airbed inspection, and counsel says, what that means is what counsel said. They should have had an affidavit from somebody that said, no, there was equipment on here, whether it's using 116 or some other document, and here's what the equipment was, and it was damaged. They've never actually proved that there was equipment on here. But let's step back.
What's your response to his argument that under the FAA regulations, all of the materials that were on the plane would have to be considered as unusable? Is that correct?
I don't know if it's correct or not. I think he referred to NTSB regulations. Maybe it was FAA regulations. But whatever it was, it's outside this record. It's a new argument. One. Number two, we made the argument that everything on this helicopter, this medevac helicopter, is one product. And so it was damaged, it was totaled, and under the economic loss rule as interpreted by Texas, the recovery is only within contract for the product. And all of the stuff that's part of that product, including the engine and the medical equipment, assuming it was there, which they haven't actually proved, it's part of that product. So if you look at the Golden Spread case, Fifth Circuit just 3 weeks ago, interpreting Texas law and the economic loss rule, they basically say what Texas is doing is applying a foreseeability test, or what they also use to say is reasonably contemplate. So if you can reasonably contemplate what is going to be damaged on the product, then it's covered by contract, because the purchaser has to get trans to protect themselves, which they did, by buying insurance on the health. So here, if you accept their argument, it's a medevac helicopter that has some medical equipment on it, then you also have to assume that it was reasonable to contemplate that medical equipment could be damaged if the hard line landing was foreseeable and the purchaser, MedTrans, should have protected themselves, which they did by buying insurance. With respect to the warranty claim, Judge Collins, you already noted a couple of the things, that there is a warranty tab that you can see in AR-112. We'll note a couple other things. It's a six-ring binder. You can clearly see a picture of it in AR-112. And then if you go to AR-123 and 124, the actual warranty, you can see there's six holes there that fit into that six-ring binder. This is what we used to call independent indicia of liability. And as you noted, the warranty tab, the pages fold up so they fit into the narrower notebook. The other thing is, on the very top of those pages, it says this is the warranty, the 250 C40/C47 series engine. This is the standard warranty that applies to all those engines. There's no question in this case, the engine on the helicopter was a 247 series engine.
What about his argument? What's your response to his argument that there isn't an adequate foundation for the warranty for, the specific component that that was replaced within the engine?
So the warranty for the component is at ER-126 and 127, and it is a standard warranty. Again, if you look at the top, that's a standard warranty, spare part for Rolls-Royce engine. In ER-126 and 127. So just looking on the face of the document, it's similar to the warranty documents we're just looking at 112 and 123 and 124. On the face of it is warranty applicable to a replacement part, in this case, the third service.
Remove any where is the declaration that tells us what that provides the authentication and foundation for tying this warranty document to this part?
That's Thomas Paine's declaration, and the record site just a second. But he removes any doubt by saying, look, I've been working for Rolls-Royce for 37 years. This is the warranty for the engine. This is the warranty for the spare part. And therefore, it's authenticated. But again, if step back a second. Dahr and MedTrans sued Rolls-Royce saying there was a violation of a breach of warranty. We've now provided the warranty so you can see what the language is in the warranty. I don't know what they were thinking of when they were suing us for a warranty, but if these aren't the warranty, why didn't they present an affidavit saying, no, this is the actual warranty, and the provisions are thus and so? There's nothing. There's no reason to not believe that these are the correct warranties just on the face of the documents. And then to remove all doubt, we provide the declaration for Mr. Stain that tells you that these are the correct warranties that are applicable. And under the terms of those warranties, the warranty is a complied warranty. and the express warranty provisions had long since expired. Basically, 24 months or 1,000 hours of use. We were well beyond that. Even if you look at the replacement part warranty, when that was put in, I think, 2009, we're well beyond that time period and well beyond those hours for that replacement turbine. We're way beyond the engine, which was much more. So, bottom line, the whole helicopter is the product here, and I apologize, I'm just looking, I wrote down the prototype somewhere for Mr. Keenan's declaration. And the trial court only relied on paragraph 6 and 8 in his declaration, which lay the foundation, remove any doubt about the foundation for the warranty for the helicopter engine and for the replacement part. But it is then attached to, let's write this separate reply statement of facts, which is starts at record site ER 24. So it should be around 30 or so. Early in the record is Mr. Sainston.
Let me ask you, we've moved the law, applicable law from Arizona to Texas, and I've looked very carefully at that issue. If I understand correctly, your position is that the Texas Supreme Court's reasoning and analysis demonstrate a preference for relying on economic loss through contract rather than through tort law. And so your argument is, if I understand it correctly, that this is not a tort issue, it's a contract issue under Texas law, and that there's a failure under the contract. Is there a specific case? I've read the cases that you have cited to us. I don't suppose the Supreme Court of Texas has relieved us by having a specific case that says you have to go by way of court law, of contract law.
So, Judge Wallace, you're correct. We believe it's contract, and I'm going to come right back to that. Mr. Stain's declaration starts at ER 43. I apologize for the delay there. Getting back, Judge Wallace, to your question, I think the best case is the Grizzly Air Services, which is a Texas Court of Appeals opinion. Facts very similar to ours, where the owner had two helicopters and they took the engine from one, put it in another helicopter, then there was a mishap claimed on the engine. That was an unpublished Court of Appeals opinion. However, the Fifth Circuit 3 weeks ago in the Golden Spread opinion cites that case and relies on it in their attempt to do an eerie prediction of what the Texas Supreme Court would do. So I was, and those are our two best cases. We've had a lot of other cases in the brief that all support that. The basic opposite idea is, look, if the only injury is to the product itself, then the buyer can protect themselves by that, like MedTrans did, the bought insurance here. Now, if, let's say this hard landing, the helicopter, instead of in a field, it had landed on a house, damaged the house. Clearly, in that circumstance, the owner of the house would have a tort claim for the damage to the roof of the house, because that's not going to be reasonably contemplated. The fact that there could be some mishap cause a hard landing of the helicopter, what MedTrans could reasonably contemplate is that would cause damage to the helicopter and anything on it, and they can, by contract, deal with that, which they did, again, by getting insurance.
What's the best case from Texas for your position?
I think it's the Grizzly case, supported by the Golden Spread case, the brand new case from the Fifth Circuit that just came out April. You know, the Grizzly case, you could argue it's unsighted. We cited a case from the Ninth Circuit, and it's okay to rely on those. And generally, you do rely on the intermediate appellate court, which is not a Supreme Court at this point. But the fact that the Fifth Circuit is relying on the Grizzly case, trying to do exactly what you're being asked to do here in terms of Texas law on the economic loss rule, I think those two cases together are best cases.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm not going to, anything else I would do would just be belaboring what we already said on our, so I appreciate the time.
Thank you.
With respect to the warranty issue for the prime turbine or the premier turbines, it is record site ER 44, and all that is said, and I do want to quote it so I make sure I quote it correctly. Mr. Sain says, on November 16, 2009, Premier Turbines replaced the subject engine's third stage turbine wheel with part number, serial number. Rolls-Royce M250 spare module part limited warranty was provided with the replacement third stage turbine wheel. A true and accurate copy of the express manufacturer's warranty card, as kept by RRC in the ordinary course of its business, is attached as Exhibit 9. Nowhere does Mr. Sain say that Premier Turbines received, acknowledged, or obtained the warranty card. He says, without citation to any document, any invoice, any paperwork, he says, conclusorily, it was sent with it. He has no proof other than we have to take, it's like the ipsy dixit of an expert. He says it, so it must be true. And that is not proper for a self-serving, uncontrovertible affidavit filed on reply only. That's with respect to the warranty. With respect to the economic loss doctrine and the other property, Mr. Klein cites to Golden Spread and Grizzly Helicopters. They're two cases that are say what they say, and neither one are applicable here. First of all, Grizzly was about whether a replacement engine was considered an integrated part into a finished helicopter. Helicopter can't fly without an engine. Engine's worthless without a helicopter. That's not our fact here. The fact that we had a swapped engine, he says, makes it similar, but it has nothing to do with this case. Golden Spread, which was just issued by the Fifth Circuit 3 weeks ago, said that a digital controller that was installed onto a steam turbine to make the steam turbine work was not other property. In our case, we have a completely separate set of facts. Our other property is medical equipment on a helicopter. The helicopter does not need the medical equipment to run. In any respect, the medical equipment does nothing with respect to the operation of the helicopter. And conversely, the helicopter in no way affects the performance of the medical equipment. It is truly separate equipment that was purchased after the original sale. And under Saratoga Fishing and Nicor Supply, those two cases clearly support the idea, proposition that aftermarket other property procured through a separate transaction after the original delivery is other property. And I'm over my time, Your Honor, so I will yield.
Thank you very much. We appreciate the arguments from both of you. They've been very helpful, and the case just argued is submitted. We will take another short break before our next case, which is Virtue Global Holdings versus Reardon.
Thank you, Your Honors.